Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Chav Gimel Medbet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Ein tzadin dagin min habivarim." One may not capture fish from a bivar. The way Rashi translates bivar is shel dagim hin breichot shel mayim. These are pools of water. Shekorim vivyar. So these are fish ponds. You're not allowed to grab a fish out of a fish pond biyom tov. Ve'ein notnim lifneim mizonot. You also cannot feed them because fish can be mistader on their own. They can get their own food. You're not responsible for their food because they can eat whatever's in the water. They can eat the other fish that are there. They don't need you to feed them. Aval, what you may do is tzadin chaya va'of min habivarim. One can capture an animal, bird, poultry, or chaya from the bivar. Notnim lifnehem mizonot. And you also can give them food. As Rashi states over here, lifnehem mizonot is bimei achoref. Tzuchim mizonot. During the winter time when there's nothing around, they need food. And even in the summertime, when there's a place which is domesticated and there's not a lot of vegetation or feed for them, that you have to provide them with food since they're in captivity. You have to provide them with food. Now, these animals were already captured, enclosed in the bivar prior to Yom Tov. And therefore, there's no longer a problem of tzeda because they're already captured. So since there's already tzeda, for you now to take them out of there is not an additional tzeda. As we would say, ein tzeda, char tzeda. There is no capture after capture. Once something is captured, then it's already considered to be mukhan and available to you. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, lo kol habivarim shavim. Not all pens or vivyars, aviaries, are the same. Zechal, kol hamechusar tzeda asur. Anything that requires you to capture the animal is problematic. Shein hamechusar tzeda mutar. Anything that does not require you to capture the animal, that is fine. The Gemara will discuss what exactly is the threshold for capture and not capture. What is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel defining over here? As we mentioned yesterday, Ein Tzadin Dagin already raises a significant issue, which is, isn't Tzeda one of the melachot that you do towards Ochel Nefesh? So why may one not do it on Yom Tov? Why is it not permissible to do this on Yom Tov? So Rashi raises the issue right away. He says, "Afagav d'shchita v'afia u'bishul me'avot melachotein." Even though they're avot melachot, v'hutru the tzorach yom tov, and they were mutarim because it's yom tov. Taima mishum t'yefshar mi'erev yom tov. It's impossible to do those prior to yom tov. And Rashi explains why. D'shchita chayish the michmar bisra. He worries about it. He does the shchita before that the meat will spoil. Pen itchamein v'yasriach because it could get warm and it will go bad. Remember that all of this is in the context of pre-days of refrigeration. So anything that you did on the prior day, there was risk involved in it. Aval, tzeda efshar l'tzodo mibo'od yom. Says, capturing the animal prior to this point in time, there is no benefit to capturing it today versus capturing it yesterday. V'yanechenu b'mitzudato b'mayim. And you can leave it inside the water. V'lo yamut. U'lamachar yitlo. And it won't die. And then tomorrow you can just pick it out and take it. So what Rashi points out is there is a way to enclose the animals, have them there, be fresh, and not do the capture today. The capture could be done yesterday, and then the animal could have been kept alive and ready and available to you without any diminishment in the serving of the food or the quality of the food that you bring. So Rashi here makes a clear distinction, which is those things that are possible mi'erev Yom Tov have to be done mi'erev Yom Tov. Those things that are not possible mi'erev Yom Tov are permissible on Yom Tov itself. Seems to be, according to Rashi, this is a di'oraito. This is a Torah-level distinction. That means like a melacha le'tzeda, you're going to be chayav min a Torah, because the melacha is a melacha that can be performed beforehand. Therefore, there's an Isur di'oraito to perform it on Yom Tov. On the other hand, melachot like shchita, afia, bishul, which are items that benefit being done on the day itself of Yom Tov, those items are going to be mutarim. They're going to be mutar because of ochel nefesh. Tosafot already raises the issue with Rashi, and he says, velo nehira. He says, Rashi's explanation doesn't make sense to me. He asks a number of questions. One of the questions goes back to Daf Gimel, which we'll go back to in a second. But on Daf Gimel, we were discussing why a beitzah shel nolda b'yom tov is problematic. In the end there were two amoraim that said, one said, gzera mishum schita, One of them says, Gzeiroi M'shem Shema Yitlosh, because you might pick the fruit. And then he says, why over there do we say that Tolesh is a problem on a Yom Tov? We don't make any distinction whether it was Efshar Lasotu Me'arav Yom Tov or Lo Efshar Lasotu Me'arav Yom Tov. And there, by Tlisha, there might be a distinction. Certain items, when you pick them on Erev Yom Tov, makes no difference between Erev Yom Tov and Yom Tov. Certain items, if you pick them on Yom Tov, will be much fresher. So where is that distinction that Rashi raises over here? How come that's not raised by Gzeiroi Shem Yitlosh? And number two is, he says, Ein L'chalek Bo'chol Nefesh Ben Efshar Lasotu Me'arav Yom Tov. The only time we have such a distinction drawn by the Gemara between what is possible to do the day before and not possible to do the day before is b'machshirei ochel nefesh. Those are things that are done in preparation or anticipation of doing something that's for ochel nefesh. For instance, whether you can sharpen a knife in order to shech. These are cases where we look at, could you have done this mi'arav yom tov? And have it be fine. That's Makshir Ochel Nefesh. But Ochel Nefesh itself, we see no distinction like that. So then what does Tosafot do with the problem here? First of all, of Ein Tzadin. Why is Tzeda a problem? So he says, oh, that's because it's Domelik Tzira. It looks like harvesting. So since it looks like harvesting, you're not allowed or not permitted to do it. But that assumes that there's a problem with harvesting. What is the Tosafot's definition of what is problematic or not problematic? For that, you have to go back to Daf Gimel. Tosfot says there is no distinction of whether it was good the day before or not good the day before. He just says there are categories of milachot that are considered to be problematic. Those categories include tzira, flisha, seida. All these are categories of milachot that are problematic. What defines which is problematic or not? You have to go back to the Tosafot on Daf Gimel. Tosafot on Daf Gimel asks the same question. He says exactly this question. Wait a minute. Why is there a problem of tlisha? The Gemara here assumes that tlisha is problematic. Why should there be a problem of tlisha whatsoever? Because it's a melechet ochel nefesh. So then he says, the answer is, he gives a number there. First of all, he brings, he pairs Rabbeinu Netanel Mikinon. Remember now, when he goes, quotes the Yushalmi. Yushalmi, which has an asmachta psukim that says that there's a smicho reparshio between ach asher yachel duchol nefesh hudu vado yaselachem and ushmartem et amatzot. The Yushalmi says that otan melachot shimishimur veilech, things that are from shimur and onward, or what we call lisha and eilech, those melachot are permissible to do for ochel nefesh. Anything before that is not permissible. And then Yushalmi brings a secondary explanation over there. From lisha and onwards are the defined melachot that are mutarim. Anything before that is asur. Now that's a nice distinction, although it doesn't work perfectly. It doesn't work perfectly because we have problems in other areas where we do have certain permissibilities, where, for instance, bone is considered to be problematic with making of cheese, even though bone is found after the list of lisha in the list of the Mishnayot in Shabbat. You could argue that bone is in a different cycle or category whatsoever. So that could be that you're arguing just in Sidurat Depat, not in things that are outside of Sidurat Depat. But many of the Rishonim discuss this problem of bone, as well as other melachot, including ones that we just saw in our Mishnah, which is grinding the peppers. You're allowed to mill the peppers in the mills. So you're allowed to mill or tchina, which is also clearly before lisha. And that is permissible on Yom Tov, whether it has to be done ka'achayav, or whether it's done like in a normal manner. Nobody seems to think that tchina is problematic, even though it's before lisha and eilech. Tosafot brings other possibilities that by tzeda, the possibility is that when you go in, you don't know what you're going to bring out. So you can bring out non-kosher fish. You can bring out items that are not edible necessarily. And therefore the melacha is not permitted because there's possibilities of doing the melacha in a way that won't end up being ochel nefesh. You put out fish nets and you capture non-kosher fish. You put out fish nets, you capture more fish than you need. So there are possibilities of, in the melacha of tzeda, of doing things that don't necessarily result in ochel nefesh, and that might be the problem with seida. All right, so there are possibilities that Tosafot would raise. The other Rishonim, and just to be sure, there is no single answer that answers all the questions. So everybody has a problem, because the Gemara never gives a principle, and the Gemara has different sugyot, where you see certain things are mutar, not mutar. Gemara never takes things as for granted, but never gives you the explanation. Rishonim are trying to bring together an explanation that explains the whole concept. So if you see here in the Rambam, in Yad HaChazaka, in Hilchot Yom Tov, Perek Aleph, Halacha Hey, he says, Kol melacha she'efshar lasot me'erev Yom Tov, ve'lo yeh ba hefseid ve'lo chisaron. There's no detriment by doing it earlier. Im nasid merev, asru chachamim lasot oto b'yom tov. Then the chachamim said it's asur to do on yom tov. Afo pi shihu, the tzorach achila, even though it's tzorach ochel nefesh. V'lama asru davar zeh. So why were they also this? Gzeirah shema yaniach adam melachto, shefser lasot oto m'erev yom tov. Liyom tov. V'nimtze yom tov kulo, holech b'yatsiyat otan melachot, v'imna misimchat yom tov, lo yelau p'nai lecho v'lishtot. So Rambam writes that the distinction is about whether the food will be fresher or not when you do it before on yom tov itself. So he makes a distinction similar to Rashi, but there's a key difference in the language of the Rambam, which is that truly these melachot are mutar. Mido raita, mina Torah, every melachot that's ochel nefesh, totally mutar. Seida would be mutar. Why is it asur? Midir Rabbanan. According to Rashi, it sounds like the distinction he draws is a doraita distinction, a Torah level distinction. But the Rambam says that clearly all of these are mutarim. The only restriction is a restriction de Rabbanan. Why did the Rabbanan just restrict it? Because what happens if you didn't prepare anything before Yom Tov? You're going to go out to hunt your animal. Then you're going to have to prepare it, do all the work. By the time you finish preparing the meal, Yom Tov will be over. You won't have any simchat a Yom Tov. So in order to prevent activities like that, the Rambam says the Rabbanim were gozer in certain instances where the preparation beforehand would not bring to any detriment in the food. So then we say don't do it on Yom Tov. But again, only on a Rabbanan level. The Raivad in principle agrees to the Rambam. He just says that the reason that the Rabbanan were oser over here is because if we leave them to do all their melacha on Yom Tov, he says, Mipneishu mikavein melachto biyom tov. It's a principle that we have that you have to do certain things before Yom Tov, because if you don't do them before Yom Tov, what's the person going to do? He's going to leave all his work for Chol HaMoed, he's going to leave all his work for Yom Tov, and then end up doing the Melacha on Yom Tov. It's something that he could have done beforehand. So the Raivad believes, like the Rambam, the same principle that Midoraita it's all Mutar, Midorabanan it's a Gzeirah. He just believes that the Gzeirah derives from the fact that we don't want you being Mekavein Melachto. We don't want you making your Yom Tov into your designated day for doing all your Melacha. That's the way the Raivad discusses it. Now, in terms of things that are permissible, the Rambam later writes in Halacha Chet, Aval Lashim, Veofim, Veshochatin, Umevashlim B'Yom Tov. These are all melachot that you're allowed to do. Shim Asal, Eilu Me'erev, Yesh B'Kach, Hefseid, Ochisaron Tam. Because if you did them beforehand, it would diminish or to be the detriment of these foods or these items. Because he says, there's nothing like fresh bread. And there's nothing like a freshly cooked dish. They all taste better when you cook them on that day than if you did them on the day before, especially, again, in a time period where there's no refrigeration. That for certain is the case. And therefore, all of these items are permitted. The Raivad over here says that all of this wonderful explanation is good when you deal with all the items before, except for something like tlisha, picking fruits. Why is the picking of fruits restricted according to the Rambam? To pick the fruit today, it's fresher, it's better. So why isn't that a better explanation? That's what the Raivad asks over here about this explanation. So he says here, "B'chol elu ein tam lama ein tovshim yerek ve'im laktim peirot min eilan biyom tov sheri b'nei yoman yafin yoter." It says, fresh item off the tree is much better than an item before. Again, without refrigeration, you have to consider that. With refrigeration, with fruits in general, it doesn't make so much of a difference. But with vegetables, it makes a huge difference between freshly picked and an item that was picked the day before. And then he quotes the Yushalmi to back up the other piece of this, which is the Yushalmi is that Milisha Veilech. That's how he gets rid of Tlisha. The Magid Mishnah over there has an interesting distinction. The Magid Mishnah says the distinction is between items or melachot that you do personally and items or melachot that you would give to your Eved to do, to your servant to do. There's certain items that the Baal HaBayit will do himself, and there's certain items that he will designate or delegate to his Eved. And that's the distinction in the Melachot here. Those that are mutar are items that you would generally do yourself. Items that you would delegate to an Eved, those are items that are asurim. Now, his distinction follows along the lines similar to that of the Ramban. The Ramban here on the Rif in the Milchomot, as well as the Ramban ala Torah, makes a distinction between what's called the Melechet Avodah and Melechet Ochel Nefesh. He points out that by all the holidays, of course excluding Shabbat, it says that what is asur to do is Melechet Avodah. Melacha is never mentioned. By Shabbat it says there's an Isur Melacha. By Pesach also there's an Isur Melacha. And then it has the exception of Achashe Yachel Ochel Nefesh Hudu Bado Yisalechem. So what the Ramban points out is that when you say malacha is asura, that means all malacha. So when you say all malacha is asura, then you need the heter, then you need dispensation of ochel nefesh. But if you say malacha d'avodah is asura, malacha d'avodah is distinct or separate, different than malacha ochel nefesh. He calls one malacha ochel nefesh or malacha hana'ah, and the other one he calls malacha avodah. What's the difference between malacha avodah and malacha ochel nefesh? So Ramban makes a distinction about quantity. It has to do with the quantity that you do. When you harvest, you don't harvest one stalk. When you harvest large quantities because your intent is to use a part of it now and a part of it later. That is going to be an avoda that is not permitted on Yom Tov because people generally do that in commercial quantities. Since they do it in commercial quantities, that's called malachet avoda. On the other hand, when people bake, they do bake just a loaf of bread, especially in their day when you can't keep the bread afterwards, you can't freeze it. You have to bake it fresh. So people will bake a single loaf of bread. What you can do are things that are not of commercial quantities. Things that you do in single quantities, those are mutarim. That's called malachet ochel nefesh or malachet hana. Malachet avoda is commercial quantities, things that you do. Seidah is an example of that. Seidah is something that you do in large commercial quantities. The Ramban still has a problem with tlisha. Tlisha is you could do, you could pick in single quantities. You don't have to pickle in commercial quantities. Go off to the tree, pick a fruit. It would be fresher. Pick a vegetable, it would be fresher. Typically, people harvest at larger quantities. So that might be a distinction with regards to how you determine. Is it the category of malacha that is asur? Or is it the particular malacha that you're engaging in? Are you doing it for commercial quantities? Or are you doing it for single quantities? That's brought up by the Rash. The Rash who takes up the Shita of Tosfot and says that the Chachamim were oser when it was uvda d'chol. He explains what is uvda d'chol. He brings the distinction of the Ramban. Things that are done for commercial quantities are considered to be uvda d'chol. Things that are not done in large quantities, that are done in single units, that's not called uvda d'chol. What the distinction between them might be is exactly this. Is the explanation of malachat avodah versus malachat ochel nefesh a categorical distinction? Every malacha in that category is asur, every malacha is mutar, as long as the rove of those malachot are done for ochel nefesh versus the rove that are done malachat avodah. That seems to be the distinction that is brought up by the Rash with regards to uvdin d'chol. On the other hand, the Ramban seems to be focused on particular malachot, on the particular activity that you're engaged in, not necessarily the malacha as a category, and therefore you're going to run into problems like tlisha and possibilities like bonet. Right, so tzeid also, you might run into that. The question, people put out traps. They trap large numbers of animals. They could. Or they put out traps for single in the animals. So you have to distinguish. There, according to the Ramban, it might be more difficult. Fish probably is captured in larger quantities. But you do have this issue. No explanation comes out with that perfect way of getting everything done. There is a Tosafot in Shabbat Tzadihei, as well as in the Gemara Megillah, who says, what about bonet? Over there, Rebbe Lezer says the problem with cheese is the fact that you're doing bonet. Why can't you do cheese on Yom Tov? Because it's melechet ochel nefesh, which would mean that bonet would be mutar. And the Tosfot goes, what happens if your house collapses on Yom Tov? House collapses on Yom Tov, we know that melacha is mutar because of ochel nefesh. Mitok shehutra, letzorech, hutra shelo letzorech. He says you should be able to rebuild your house in Yom Tov because you have nowhere to live. You have no shade. You're sitting in the sun. Because of Mitoch, you should be able to build or rebuild your house on Yom Tov. So Tosafot rejects that and says, no, because of Uvda d'chol. The Mechamami didn't permit it because of Uvda d'chol. But Tosafot in the end seems to be Mekabalist. He says, Midoraita, it seems like Bonet would be permitted and building a house would be permitted. Only because it's Uvda d'chol do we say, no, that it is not permitted. Tosafot and Megillah brings a separate answer which says that making cheese is actually, not only is it can be done for Erev Yom Tov, it's better if it's done for Erev Yom Tov. Cheese, he says, is better when you do it beforehand. So yes, maybe if it was the same on the Erev Yom Tov, it would be mutar midoraita. But over here, it's asur midoraita because it's actually better if you do it beforehand. So we want you to do it beforehand. Again, the Ramban says it's a problem with commercial quantities. People don't make a little piece of cheese. They make large blocks of cheese. And later on, they take off pieces of that cheese. So since you're doing it in large commercial quantities, therefore it's problematic. Tosafot over there gives that reason. Again, the reason of possibility that here it's negative on Yom Tov. The other possibility that it is mutar, except it's uvda d'chol, and that's why it's not permitted on Yom Tov. It brings a third answer, which is possibility that if you do it right before nightfall. This is Tosafot the Shittado and the Chiluk between Rabban and Rav Chista whether you can be ofer from Yom Tov to Shabbat. Who do we paskin like? It has to do if you do it immediately before nightfall. If you do it immediately before nightfall, then you no longer have this permissibility of ho'il. And number two is you don't have anybody to eat it or utilize it. If you do it right before nightfall, that's how Tosafot tries to explain. Tlisha, bone, all of these items were done right before nightfall. And therefore the melacha doesn't turn out to be a melacha tochlan nefesh. It's a nice way to get out of the problem, but it defeats the whole distinction that you make, because then the distinction is not true in any melacha. All melacha tochlan nefesh just happened to be the cases that Gemara talking about were just right before nightfall. And therefore Tlisha was problematic and bone was problematic, but you could come up with the same scenario in Afiyah, or the same permissible scenario in Bone or Tlisha, according to the Tosafot, which seems to be the Shita, that with the Shonev, these items are permissible midoraita, it's only Derabanan that they are Asurim. Tosafot over there, you ask, it's not universally accepted that Bone is Mutar, and that Bone Shehutra Mitoch Babinyan Batim is Mutar, but that Tosafot is Mechudash. Shmir Shabbat Gilkotah, he brings down from Shlomo Zalman with Tziruf, with other Heterim, that he would be willing to use that Tosafot. And then I heard Mr. Findel that in the time they were dismantling Yamit, it was around Yom Tov, and that there was a Psak Halacha given that they could build on Yom Tov in Yamit based on this Tosafot in order to protect Yamit and to stop them from dismantling Yamit. Right, again, based on this Tosafot. Again, it's a very big Chiddush in Tosafot, but they utilized that they thought was a Shatad Chak, and they were willing to use it. I'm not saying this Halacha, I'm just bringing you down that people do utilize this Tosafot in interesting situations. All right, that gives just a broad perspective on the different Rishonim. I'll send you, you can read it inside, all these different things. But it's a very important thing that comes up over and over again here in the Masechta, is how do you know when something is Melachat Ochel Nefesh and when it's not Melachat Ochel Nefesh? Again, the Gemara never gives you a clear definition of that. It just gives you examples. And here's one of these examples, which is Tzeda is not permitted, and it has to fit into your explanation why it is that Tzeda is not permitted over here. Right now the Gemara continues. Verminu, we bring a brighter Tosefta. Bivarim shochayav shalofot ein tzadin mehem. When it comes to these bivarim of animals or of poultry, you cannot be tzad for them. Biyom tov. Veinotim lehem is a note, and you cannot feed the animals that are inside there. Kasha chaya chaya. That brighter, that Tosefta is in contradiction to our Mishnah. And kasha ofot ofot. Both of these instances, our Mishnah says it's permissible. Here the Tosefta says it's impermissible. Our Mishnah says you can feed them. The Tosefta says you cannot feed them. Now, bishlama chaya chaya lo kasha. When it comes to the animals, then it's not a question. Ha Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan. That distinction is Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanans. It's not. Rabbi Yehuda omer atzad sipor le migdal. Utzvi le bayit chayav. Person who captures on Shabbat a bird into a tower. Tower here is not necessarily a tower. Migdal here is like an amwar or some sort of small area. Utzvi labayit, or you capture a deer into the house. You lock it in the house. Chayav, that is considered to be tzeda, and you are chayav on Shabbat. Labayit hu d'mechayev. He's only mechayev if you bring it into the house. V'alabivarim lo. But when it comes into a pen or corral, that would not be sufficient. That's too large an area, and that's not considered to be tzeda. V'chamim arim tzibor l'migdal. They agree by the bird that bringing it to Migdal is Tzeda. Over here, the Gersa probably should read, Tzvi, labayit, lagina, ulechatzer, lubivarim. That a Tzvi in any of these areas are considered to be captured. So now the explanation will be, with regards to our Mishnah is the Chachamim. Chachamim will say that once you're in a pen, once you're in a corral, that's already considered to be captured, then you can take it on Yom Tov, and you can feed it, because now it's considered to be domesticated. On the other hand, the Tosefta that says you can't do that is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda who says that that's not considered to be captured until you bring it into the house, until you bring it to a much smaller or confined area. But, elofoto fot kasha. With regards to birds, you don't have a solution over here. Because both of them agree that a bird is only considered to be captured once you bring it into a migdal. So that doesn't solve your problem. V'chite ma nami lo kasha ha bebivar mikure ha bebivar she'enu mikure. Makes a difference whether the aviary has a roof over it, doesn't have a roof over it. Maybe that'll be the distinction we draw. That doesn't work so well. A house is the equivalent of a covered aviary. And everybody agrees that that's still not considered to be captured. So just because you have a roof over it doesn't make it any more captured than when it doesn't have a roof over it. The question is confinement to a smaller area. And that we don't have that in our case over here. So I'm Rabbi Varvuna, acha b'tzipor dror askinan. We're dealing with the free bird. Tzipor dror, shadarab habayit kibasadet. lives in the house like it lives in the field, which means that even when it's in the house, it's a free bird, just like it is when it's out in the field, because it will escape from you. It won't let you capture it. It is, flies very well, sneaks into the corners, won't let you get a hold of it. And that's why it's called dror. Hashem dira shedara b'chol makom. It can live anywhere and not feel confined. Says al kabitzvi droras yinin she'enim mekabelet marut, which doesn't accept mastery or authority, which just means that even when it's in there, it's not captured. Now, if you deal with things like poultry, like chicken or geese, which don't have big flight and they can't get away very easily, so once they're brought into a migdal, they're brought into a confined area, they're considered to be captured. On the other hand, when you're dealing with birds that can take flight and they can fly around, anything that has real ability to fly, then even when they're in the house, they're not captured. You could chase it all day around the house. You're not going to get it necessarily. You have to confine it to a much smaller area in order for it to be captured. So that's the distinction that he's drawing here. The Tosefta, which says that it's problematic, is talking about a bird that has the ability to escape from you. Our Mishnah is talking about birds that, once they're confined, don't really go anywhere, or you can easily capture them. Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel. Lama nikra shmat sipor dror. Shadar av abayit ki basadet. Because it lives in the house like it lives in the field. That's a free bird. Hashtra dati da'alki, if that's the case, achaya nami lo kasha. You can have the same answer here. Ha bivar katan, ha bivar gadol. That's a small corral or a large corral. Depends on the confinement of the animal, so therefore we can make that distinction. Hey, chidami bivar katani, chidami bivar gadol. Well, now that you've done that and made that as the distinction, what's the threshold between small and big? So Amar Ravashi, we've got a number of answers in the Amoraim here. Ravashi says, go echa derohit abatro, umatila b'chad shchia, bivar katan. Any animal that you run after it, and with one lunge, you can grab it, that is a bivar katan. V'idach bivar gadol. And anything that's not that way, if you can't grab it in one lunge, that's considered to be a bivar gadol, and it'll be a problem with mechusar tzeida. Inami, kohecha de'ika ukse bivar gadol. Any place where there are corners where the animal can hide or sneak away from you, that's considered to be bivar gadol. Bidach, anything else is considered to be a bivar katan, an area where he can't escape from you because there are no corners to run away to. Inami, here's a third possibility. Kohecha de'nafle tula de'katle ahadodi bivar katan. Anywhere where the shade or the shadow cast by the walls basically overlap, that's considered to be a bivar katan. Bidach, anything larger than that would be a bivar gadol. So here you have three different possibilities of defining bivar katan, bivar gadol. One being whether you can grab it in a single lunge. The other one being whether the animal has places to escape to. And the third one being how close the walls are together in terms of their casting the shadow. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, lokol bivarim shavim. Not all corrals or pens are the same. I'm Rabbi Yosef from Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, locha ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The locha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah. Amr Le'abayi, locha michlal de blige. You're saying the locha is this way implies that there are those that argue on Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Amr Le'ay, umay nafkala amina. Why does it make a difference that they argue the locha is like him? So who cares if anybody else argues on him? The only question is the locha like him? And the answer is, yes, the locha is like him. So Amr Le'ay, he answers them, Gemara gamur zmurtotei. So the traditional way that you translate it is, you just learn Gemara like you learn a song. You just sing along the words. You don't try to understand it. You don't go for a depth of understanding over here. It's not just like the words of any old song. Gemara has meaning to it. And therefore, anything you say, you have to be careful about how you say it. And you have to be midayek in what you say in order to understand it better. So that's the answer that he gives. Generally, when the Gemara does this, then it gives a second answer and explains to you whether they are arguing or not. Here the Gemara ends. That's one thing. Second thing is, Rashi gives a different definition too. Gemara Gomor's Murtadei, he says that it's a mashal shutimhu. It is a mashal, a parable of those that are not well-versed, or people that don't understand, which is, person comes along and learns something, and doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong. We say to him, oh great, you did a great job, you learned something today. Doesn't matter if you got the item right or you got the item wrong. So then you're congratulating him for learning? Well, it's like a song, just sounds good, and it's good. No, you have to get the right answer. You have to get the right conclusion. It's not enough just to have, quote-unquote, learned. It's you have to actually get to the bottom of the issue. It says the same thing over here. What do you mean? Just halacha is like him. Just because you learned or because you said it isn't enough. You have to understand it. You have to be able to midayek from it. Again, the Gemara provides no counter to this question being posed over here. Zekla al-kola mechusar tzeda, hechi dami mechusar tzeda. So here the Gemara goes back into Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's question and says, what is considered to be mechusar tzeida, lacking capture? What's not? I'm Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Kol shomer have mitzuda v'nitzodena. So anything that we say, bring a trap to trap it, that is a problem of mechusar tzedah. So now, this, by the way, is a fourth definition. As Rashi points out, there's no difference here between what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says and what we said before about a bivar gadol and a bivar katan. These are the same definition. So here is an additional way you could define whether something is a bivar gadol or bivar katan is, do you need a trap to trap them or some sort of mechanism to trap the animal? Or can you simply go in there and take the animal? Everybody agrees that tzedah is impermissible. The only question is, what's the definition of not being tzad anymore? So in tzadim and abivarim, as long as a fish is swimming in a pool or a pond, it's lacking tzedah, and therefore it's problematic. Animals and birds, that definition is slightly different than it is for a fish. Correct, then it should be fine. Then it should be fine, because then you're not mechusar tzedah anymore. It's only a question of what's considered tzedah or not tzedah. For fish, that definition or that threshold is much higher than it is for animals and birds, which are bigger and easier to capture. I mean, a cow doesn't move so fast. And sheep aren't going to move so fast. Birds, even chickens, they move, but they're limited in terms of their movement and the speed. Fish can move very fast, even in small areas. So again, all we're trying to do is define what's already captured or not captured. What you're saying is true, that, as Rashi mentions this, which is that, he says in the end, what the Gemara seems to do with Bivar Gadol and Bivar Katan is basically say that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is qualifying the Tanakama, and that they're not arguing. That Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is telling you what is Bivar Gadol and what is Bivar Katan, and that it's not necessarily a machloket. Based on that answer, you're right. Then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is just defining what the Tanakama meant. There's no longer a machloket. So that is true, based on the way the Gemara concludes. And that's why here, when you have an Amora that gives a distinction, it's just an extension of the distinction of Bivar Gadol and Bivar Katan. So Amar Abaye, Abaye says back to Rav Yosef, Vaha Avazim V'tana Golim, Shomrim Haveh Mitzuda V'nitzudena. When it comes to geese and to chickens, you still bring in a trap or something to corner them or capture them. And nevertheless, Vitanya, Atzad Avazim, Vitana Golim, Vione Herdisiot, Patur. Anybody who traps these items is not considered to be problematic. Amar Rabba Baravuna Mashmo, Halalu Baim Lechluvan Le'erev, Valalu Ein Baim Lechluvan Le'erev. The difference is, and now the modern day word, a kluv, is a cage. Over here, as Rashi says, they're talking about their nests. But these birds come back to their nests on a daily basis, whereas other items don't come back to their nests on a daily basis. So when they come back to their nests on a daily basis, then it's easy to capture them, because by definition, they're going to come back to their nests. Other items that don't necessarily come back to their nests at night, then they become much more problematic, and that's why it's considered to be an issue. So hare yone shovach v'yone aliyah. What about these birds, these doves or pigeons, whether they're pigeons or doves that live in a dove cote, or they're wilder ones, which is that they live on their own? The bayin lekluvan le'erev, they always return to their dove cote, they always return to their location at night. Betanya, tzad yone shovach, yone aliyah, betziporim shekinenu, betfichim. You capture these pigeons, or birds that have nested inside of jars, bibirot, that you have on these towers or on the houses, on these big palaces, chayav. So why is that the case? They return to their nests every night. So if you're telling me when they return to the nest every night, it's not a problem to capture them, even if you use a trap, because they're always going to come back. So dear, I have a bunch of birds that return to their nests every night, and yet you're telling me it's problematic. They come back to their nests every night, and you're obligated to feed them. Yeah, they return to their nests at night, but you don't have to feed them. So by the pigeons, they're wild. Even though they return to their nests, they're wild, and you don't have an interaction with them. On the other hand, with these birds, whether it's the geese, whether it's the chickens, they return to their nests at night, plus they're depending on you for their food. So those two things make them much more domesticated and as if they are captured because they are dependent on you. They're going to have to come for their food. They're going to have to come to their nest, even if you have to catch them during the day and chase them around a little bit. But the bottom line is that they are already in captivity. Rav Mari Amar, Hane Avide Liribuye, Vane Lo Avide Liribuye. The difference is whether they leave their nest or not. Kule Name Avide de Rubuye, Lukluvan, Akamrina, and Avide de Rubuye. That when these animals come back, when they fly to their nests, if you go after them, do they slip away? So that's what the Rubuye means over here, or do they slip away? So that's what he says here. Hani Avide de Rubuye, these, if you go to their nests and try to capture them, they'll slip away from you. The others, if they're in their nest, they're not going to escape from you. They don't really run away. They try to stay in their nests. So Gemara says, so he says, all of them run away. They all try to escape from you. I'm talking about, do they run away to their nests? Or do they run away, period? Do they try to escape? So when it comes to the pigeons or the other animals, you go to the dovecote, you go up there to try to capture them. Yeah, they run to their nests, but then if you go up there, they'll fly off. They won't stay there. On the other hand, when it comes to the chicken or the geese, you start chasing them, they'll run back to their nests. And when they're in their nests, they're not necessarily going to run away from those areas. So that'll be the distinction that we draw. Again, all of these definitions are trying to figure out what is considered to be captive already and what is considered to still be wild and require tzedah. It has to do with the ease in which you can take these animals in or you can utilize these animals. And so here they're trying to give definition to that. And that distinction will give you a differentiation between different types of birds, different types of animals. Okay, next Mishnah. Mitzudot chayav ofed dagim shasan me'erev yom tov. If you set up the traps on Erev Yom Tov, lo yitomahem beYom Tov, you can't take the animals that were trapped on Yom Tov. Ilim kein yodeya shenitzudu me'erev Yom Tov, unless you know for certain that they were captured on Erev Yom Tov. U'maseh b'nachri echad, there was this instance with a non-Jew, she'vi dagim l'Rabbeinu Gamliel, who brought fish to Rabbi Gamliel. V'amar mutarimim, they're totally fine. Elishein ritzoni l'kabel imenu, I don't want to take it from him. So what it sounds like from here is that he got him the fish that were captured, were taken out of the water on that day. But he didn't want to take him from the Nachri, but underlying them was Mutar, which sounds to contradict what we said until now, that if they're captured on Yom Tov, it's problematic. Here it sounds to be okay. So Gemara is going to ask that right away. Masa Listor, the Maitse of Rabbi Gamliel seems to say the exact opposite of what the Mishnah is saying. So Hasure Mechsera, in all these cases, we're missing some transition, key transition words. Vachutani. Safek Muchan Asur. The Tanakhama believes that if it's for sure certain it was captured on Yom Tov Asur. Safek, if it was Erev Yom Tov also Asur. Ve Rabban Gamliel Matir. Rab Gamliel says it's Mutar. When you have a Safek, it's Mutar. So now this is a proof to the fact that when it's Safek Muchan by the Goy, he doesn't know whether he captured the fish today or he captured it yesterday. So that's why it's Mutar. But he didn't want to accept it for whatever reasons, because he didn't want to make it look like the Nachri was doing work for him, or people might get the wrong impression. Rashi mentions Avir Shanisono, which is that he didn't like the guy, and he didn't want to take it from him. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmol. Ain't alocha Rabbi Gamliel. The alocha is not to like Rabbi Gamliel over here. Viki dematni lo ahad etanyo. Some have this on a brayta that says, Safek Muchan Rabbi Gamliel Matir. Rabbi Yeshua Oser. It's Bob Plukta. Rabbi Yeshua says it's Asur. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmol. Alocha Rabbi Yeshua. On our Mishnah, you can't make a positive statement because Rabbi Yeshua doesn't appear in our Mishnah. So therefore he says, Ein alocha k'Rabbi Gamliel, if it's on our Mishnah. Whereas by the brighter, we have the two opinions, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. He says in the positive statement, alocha is like Rabbi Yeshua. V'ika dematni lo aha. That some say that this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol was said on this brighter. The Tanya, we have a brighter. Shochatin min ha-nagarim b'yom tov. One can take out an animal from Nagar. So Rashi says, Shochatim chayot min ha-bivarim. The fish nitzodim v'omdim. You can take them out of these corrals because they're already captured. V'ashem shosim nigrei mayim v'charitzim lishtot achayot. Since they make these pools of water for the animals to drink from, karilei nagarim. These areas are called nagarim because they have pools of water to feed the animals. Right? It's not a carpenter. So you can take them out. V'yomtom. Aval lo min arishtot o min amechmorot. You can't take them out of the nets. Or mina mechmorot, which seem to be more complex type of traps. Shimon Elazar Omer, Bau Matzan Mikultalin Me'erev Yom Tov. If he sees that the traps are messed up on Erev Yom Tov, Be'oduah Shimerev Yom Tov Nitzodu. Then you know for sure that the animal was captured on Erev Yom Tov. Umutarim, and then it's fine. Bau Matzan Mikultalin Be'Yom Tov. He finds them only messed up on Yom Tov, Be'oduah Shimerev Tov Nitzodu Ve'asurim. And then they are problematic. As Rashi explains here, that they had a chain of traps. So if one of the traps was triggered, it used to pull all the traps. And so if he didn't go out and check where the animal was captured, he just checked the first trap and he saw that it was already pulled. Then he goes out on Yom Tov and he sees an animal in a trap that's further out. He knows that that happened on Erev Yom Tov because on Erev Yom Tov he saw that the closer trap was already triggered. Since it was triggered, it meant that the animal was captured on Erev Yom Tov. But if he only says it's triggered on Yom Tov, then it only happened on Yom Tov. Then the Gemara says, Ha gufa kasha, you have an inherent stira here. Mart bau matzan mikukalim erev yom tov. If you come and find evidence of the fact that the trap was triggered on erev yom tov, b'yaduah erev yom tov nitzodu. Time of the bau matzan mikukalim. That's only because you found evidence of that on erev yom tov. Ha sveik ha asurin. But if you didn't know, then it would be asur. Unless you have evidence that it was an Erev Yom Tov, then the default is that it's asur. Ema Seifa. What about the latter half of this? Baal Matzan Mekukalim B'Yom Tov. If he finds the trap triggered on Yom Tov, B'Yaduash B'Yom Tov Nitzodu. Time of the Baal Matzan Mekukalim. That's only because you found it triggered on Yom Tov. Ha-Sveika. The default would be that if it was a Sveik, Me Erev Yom Tov Nitzodu Umutarin. So which way is it? We don't know which way the Sveik goes over here. So now Umar says, I'll explain to you. Hachi kamar. This is how you have to understand it. Ba'u matzan mekukalim erev yom tov, yiduash erev yom tov nitzodu. If you find the traps triggered on erev yom tov, then you know it's an erev yom tov and it's mutarin. Ha sveika. You imply from that as safek is nasek kamishin nitzodu be yom tov. It's as if it was triggered on yom tov and it's asur. So that's how the Gemara answers it, that the second half of the seifa is a continuation of the default case, which is that when a default of safek is equivalent of being captured on yom tov itself. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Meshmol, Alocha ki Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The Alocha here is like Rabbi Shimon Elazar, who says that Safek is Asur, which is the equivalent of saying, Ein Alocha ki Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah, Alocha ki Rabbi Yeshua in the Braita, or Alocha ki Rabbi Shimon Elazar in this Braita, this Tosefta over here. All of them are the same conclusion, which is Safek Mukhan is Asur. And now, next Gemara. Ma'amar Mutarin Hein. Rabbi Gamliel says the fish that was brought by the non-Jew was Mutar. Mutarim the Mai. What does it mean that they were mutar? So Rav Amar mutarim lekabel. They're mutar betil tov. But Levi Amar mutarim b'achila. But Levi says they're even mutar b'achila. So just, you know, the Tosafot on the first daf in the Masechta quotes this Gemara as evidence of the fact that Muksa has different categories. Muksa can sometimes be just asur b'achila, but mutar betil tov. Sometimes Muksa is even asur betil tov. Where do you see that? Right here. Rav just said over here, that these items that he says they're mutar betilto, but asur ba'achila. Which means that achila, in terms of its interaction with muksa, that's the highest form of interaction with muksa, is to eat it. So because that is such an intimate interaction with the muksa, that won't be permissible. But carrying the muksa will be permissible over here. On the other hand, Levi says that they were even mutarim ba'achila. Amarav, lo'olam al yimana adam atzmo mibeit ha-midrash, afilu sha'achat. A person should never skip a day in the Beit Midrash, even for a moment. Dan of a Levi Avin and Kamei de Rabbi. I and Levi learnt before Rabbi. Rabbi is Rav's Rebbe, as well as Levi. We know that Levi is also learns before Rabbi. We have that in the Gemara in Sukkah, that Levi did a kida bifnei Rabbi, that he did perform that kida in front of Rabbi, and then he got into trouble. He injured himself in that way. So we know that Levi is a Talmud of Rabbi, and we also know that Rav learnt by Rabbi before he leaves to go to Bavel. He was a Talmud before Rabbi. So Rav and Levi are learning before Rabbi, and Ki Amar LaHashmaita Taburta, at night, when he said over this memory, he said, Amar Mutarim Ba'achila. He says that they are Mutar Ba'achila, that's what Rav Gamliel meant. B'tzafro Amar Mutarim LeKabel. In the morning, he changed his mind and says, no, they're only Mutar to be tilto, not Ba'achila. Ana Davai Be Midrasha Hadribi. I was there both times. I was there at night and the day, therefore I retracted the position, because I know Rabbi retracted his position. Levi Dilava Bay Midrusha, Levi was there at night but didn't show up in the morning. Lo Hadar Bay, he didn't retract his position because he wasn't there when Rabbi retracted his position. So that's the point. You always have to be in the Bay Midrash because things change. It's dynamic. Halacha's dynamic, and you need to be there because you may hear one piece and not get the retraction on the next day. Metave Nachri Shevi Doron Li Israel. Nachri that brings a gift to Israel, Afilu Dagim Amifulamim. Even Fulamim are Lachim, fresh. These are moist, fresh fish, uperot b'nei yoman, or fruit that are clearly picked that day, mutarim. They are mutar. Fish, l'malomand amr mutarim lekabel shapir. Right, the one who says that the mutarim means that you can take them, but you can't eat them, then that makes sense. L'malomand amr mutarim b'achila, it's mutar b'achila, peirot b'nei yoman misharu b'achila. There is nobody who will say that if you pick a fruit today, that you can eat it today. The goy picks you the fruits today, nobody would say that. So where it says, Ulu Tameich, Perot B'nei Yuman Mishari B'Tiltol. According to you, fruit that's picked today is Nolad. It's Nolad even, as Rashi says here, even Rabbi Shimon would agree. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of Muksa, holds of what's called Grugarot V'Tzimukim. Grugarot V'Tzimukim are fruits that you put out to dry in the Muksa. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees that things that are not Muksa in general doesn't hold of Muksa. Over there it says that's Muksa. Why? Because when you put out the fruits to dry, you are completely mesiach dat chomim. You're not going to engage with these fruits. You intend for them to dry for months. There's no way that you're going to take those fruits. That's called muksa biyadayim. So Rabbi Shimon agrees to that. So here's the same thing. fruits that are on the tree going into Yom Tov, you are clearly mikatsim in adat, because you have no access to them. There is just no way you can eat them on Yom Tov. So they're equivalent of grugarot and simukim. So Rashi says, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon both agree that these are problematic in terms of mukse. So if that's the case, nobody thinks that perot b'nei yuman are okay, whether it's for achila or whether it's for tiltol. So the Gemara says, oh, we can understand according to one who says you can't eat them. Because that's why over here it's mutar. Mutar means you can carry them around. Mutar betiltol. He says, what are you talking about? Perot that are on the tree. Forget about not eating them. There's no way you can pick them up. They are complete muksa. Muksa, so muksa that even Rabbi Shimon agrees that they're muksa. So now you have a problem for both opinions here. Ella, what are we talking about here? Bikavre dadime, talking about fish who are red under their gills. Upere dikvishe biyarko, or fruits that are wrapped in vegetables as kinan. So that's why they are still fresh, but not fresh as in taken out today. The fish was clearly captured yesterday. It's fresh because you check under the gills, it's still red, meaning that it still has a quality of freshness to it, but it clearly wasn't brought today. The fruits are wrapped in vegetables to maintain their freshness. Clearly they weren't picked today. They were picked yesterday, but they were the equivalent of what we call today refrigerated or frozen. They were kept in a fresh state. So b'ayi kari lei b'nei yoman. So then why does it call them that they were taken from today? Kari b'nei yoman. They are fresh like they were picked today. And that's why they are mutar. Says they're mutar because none of this was done on Yom Tov itself. None of this was done on Shabbat itself. Amar of Papa. Here we go. Hilchato. Here is the halacha. Nochri shevi doron Yisrael b'Yom Tov. A non-Jew gifts something to a Jew on Yom Tov. Im yesh ve'oto amin b'mechubar. If you can find that species attached to the ground, asur, because we assume that he picked it from that which was attached to the ground, and therefore problematic both be'achila and problematic be'tiltol. U'erev, and at night, they're also asur in the amount of time it would take you to facilitate whatever this guy did. If he picked it and brought it to you, then you have to wait the amount of time after the termination of Yom Tov in order for the amount of time it would take you to go and pick it and then bring it back. But if there is nothing within tchum that is attached, mutar. If there's nothing within this area that's mechubar and he brought it from inside of the tchum, then you can utilize it. Chutz l'tchum, if he brought it outside of the tchum, meaning that he went outside of the tchum to get it, and then it's also asur. Vaba bishvil Yisrael zeh mutar l'Yisrael acher. And something that's brought for this Jew is okay for another Jew to utilize. Right now, Rashi already asks the question. He says, Chutz l'tchum is asur. Why? He says, Lo shamati tam mikubal badavar. I never heard a good explanation for why, when it's chutz l'tchum, that is asur. If you say the problem is mukse, then why is it mutar for another Yisrael? He says, if that's the explanation, that's a good explanation, it's mukse. It came outside of the tchum. It's outside of your realm of Yom Tov and Shabbat. But if that's the case, it's also outside the realm of your fellow Jew, and that means that it should be a sur for both of you. So that certainly cannot be the explanation. So he says, the Ishlamar, the Gabi Isur Tchumin Derabanan, Lo Achmur Kulei Hai. By Tchumin Derabanan, they weren't Machmir so much, but Dayani Masru Al Zeh, therefore they only usur this particular Israel, not another. What he's basically saying is that Mukse has a higher level of Isur Derabanan. We do see that in other places, that Mukse has a higher threshold of Isur. Versus tchumim, which are a lower threshold. It actually happens to be, I'm surprised, because Rashi says this, because in other places in Shas, it's just the opposite. That we get more chumor tchumim, because there are opinions that tchumim are d'oraita, like Rabbi Akiva. And even according to those that say tchumim are d'rabanan, maybe at 12 meal, it becomes d'oraita. So there you would have more reason to believe that the d'rabanan here is more chumor, rather than more mekel. Okay, but Rashi suggests that's one possibility. Tam acher nirelei mechuz l'tchum asurim gzeira shema yishalach bishvilo. Maybe he will send the goy to bring it for him. Because the problem is that you're sending the Nachri to get it for you. So the other Jew doesn't have that problem. He didn't send the Nachri. He didn't ask him to do this for him. Therefore, it's mutar. He doesn't know this other guy. The goy doesn't know this other guy. So that's why the other Israel is mutar. Those are the two reasons Rashi gives. Now, here you have a major halachic discussion, machloket, which Rashi brings up here. It's an unbelievable Rashi. It just tells you a little bit about Rashi. Rashi says that while he was growing up and whenever he lived, he always assumed that when you have 2 days of Yom Tov, the Gemara here says that you may not utilize an item that's brought by an Achri on the Yom Tov itself, plus Kadeshiatsu, the amount of time that it takes to do it. So what Rashi says is right. You can't use it on the first day of Yom Tov. And you can't use it because she asked you into the second day of Yom Tov. But after that, you could use it on the second day of Yom Tov, Mimonov Shach. Because either the first day of Yom Tov, when you have Shteir Yom Tov and Shel Galiot, either the first day was Chol, and when the Nachi brought it, wasn't a problem at all. So therefore, you could eat it on the second day. If first day was Yom Tov, then the second day would be Mutar after Kadeshi Asu. So that's why after the first day of Yom Tov, you ate Kadeshi Asu, and you're fine. So that's what Rashi says. I always thought the halacha was that way. And he goes, I never bothered to ask my Rebbe, because it was so obvious to me that the halacha was that way. And in our city, that was the practice. Everybody did that. He says, V'lo zachiti lishol pi Rebbeinu Yaakov. But davar zeke, you knew a gimbo heter mimkomeinu. Everybody did this. V'ali davar pashut. And I thought it was simple, that there was no halacha question here. Odo achar p'tira tosh rabbi, after my Rebbe passed away, Shemati et Rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi, Shu Oser, another one of Rashi's Rebbeim, was Oser. Ad leo motzei Yom Tov Sheni. He says it's Asur until the second night of Yom Tov. Cholan Sheiro Kim Oto. And all the city practiced like him. V'gam alochot gidolot osrim came. And the Bahag also says the same thing. And listen to what he says. V'danti lefanav. He says, I went and argued with him. I presented my position. The holy davar. Didn't help. Whatever I said, he knocked down. B'chol tamo, enu elemen nakat, b'kdei shiasu. B'layla ruya l'esiyah kamar. K'dei shiasu means the amount of time it would take you to do it. It has to be in a time that you can do it. When can you do it? After the second day of Yom Tov, not after the first day of Yom Tov. Therefore, they believe that you have to wait until after the second day of Yom Tov. Now, Rashi disagrees with that. He says, u'b'tshuvat Rabbeinu Gershon me'or agolah matzati kamoti. Says, Rabbeinu Gershon paskins like me. And he says, Gam ata bailai michtav mi garmais. I have a letter that came to me from Worms, that there was an Adam Gadol who came there, Zakim v'yoshebi shivam in Roma. He came from Rome. The early Rishonim, the first breakaway from Bavel, we see is actually in Rome. That's where you have the first establishment of, where there's a European presence of Talmidei Chachamim. So he got a message from someone in Rome that said, Ushmo Rabbi Polonimus. Polonimus is one of the very, very early Rishonim out of Rome. Ubaki b'chol ashas, you know, ashas cold, v'hore kain, v'nechla kalehem. And he paskin like me, and he was holik on all of them. So here you have, already in Rashi's time, where Rashi took for granted, is already a machloket about. Tosafot takes up the shita of Rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi, and he says that you have to wait 2 days. Kadesh yasu means the amount of time that you can do it. And you have to wait until the time that you can do it. The machloket stems from a fundamental difference in their understanding of what the problem is here. Why is it that we do not permit you to use these items? Why is it that we don't allow you to take from the Nachri? What are we worried about? Are we worried about the fact that you're going to ask the Nachri to do the malacha for you? Is that what we're worried about? We're worried about that you can actually say to Nachri, please do this malacha for me. What is our penalty? Our penalty is wait. And so that you don't get benefit from doing the malacha on Yom Tov. That the malacha wasn't benefited on Yom Tov. Rashi says, we don't want you getting benefit from a malacha that was done on Yom Tov. Rashi's explanation is that, simply, we don't want you benefiting from malacha on Yom Tov. How do I prevent you from getting benefit on Yom Tov? One, don't use it on Yom Tov. What about the fact that you would have to do it after Yom Tov? So wait, today she asked you after Yom Tov, and I prevented the problem. So that's exactly it. The reasoning behind his position is, I don't want you benefiting from malacha done in Yom Tov. How do I ensure that that's the case? I make sure that you wait through Yom Tov, place Kadesh Yasu after the first day of Yom Tov. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, we don't want you getting the Nachri to do malacha for you. We don't want you engaging the Nachri to do malacha for you to your benefit. So now, if I hold like Rashi, I still benefit from it. Because when the Nachri does the malacha on the first day of Yom Tov, I'm able to benefit on the second day of Yom Tov. So if I engage the Nachri to do it, I'm still benefiting from what the Nachri did, because now I can do it on the second day. I myself could never have done that. I myself could never have done it on the first day, and therefore I could never have gotten that benefit on the second day. By engaging the Nachri, that benefit that I'm getting is still there, because I now benefit from it on the second day. What I don't want you engaging the Nachri to benefit yourself on Yom Tov. So if I allow you to get benefit on the second day, you're going to ask the Nachri to do it on the first day of Yom Tov. Even though you won't get any hanoah on that Yom Tov, it still benefits you for the second day. How do I prevent that? I say you wait until after the second day of Yom Tov, Kadesh Yasu. Then there's no benefit from you engaging the Nachri. So their difference in opinion stems from what they think the problem is over here. Rashi thinks the problem is we don't want you benefiting from Melechet Yom Tov. So all I have to do is to remove that problem.
Tosafot says, I don't want you engaging the Nachmi and asking the Nachmi to do things from you. How do I do that? I tell you, don't use it until after the Kadesh Yasu on the second day, because then there's absolutely no benefit. Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rashi. The Ramah says that many paskin like Tosafot, that people are machmir for the Shita that Tosafot, the way Kadesh Yasu afterwards. The Bir Halacha says that in most instances where there is a Tzad HaKel, then we paskin like Rashi, because Rashi makes the most sense. There are a lot of Rishonim that hold like Rashi, and therefore you can be Someich on Rashi in most instances, and therefore, for instance, if a newspaper got delivered on Yom Tov, leaving out the problem of whether it was printed on Yom Tov and its problem of Nolad, of Chodesh, of Muktzah, but it may come from Chuslut Chum for the particular person's house you're staying at on the second day of Yom Tov, then can you read the newspaper from the first day of Yom Tov? Well, it depends. It was brought for them, not for you. So it came from Chutz L'Tchum for them. And we said over here, if it comes from someone else, it's mutar for you. That's number one. Number two is we pass on like Rashi. Rashi don't have to wait after the first day of Yom Tov for a melacha that's done. And Kadesh Yatsu. So then we mean on the second day of Yom Tov, you could read the first day's newspaper. Again, if it was brought for the other person, not for you, but it would be a possibility if mutar to read the newspaper on Yom Tov. If it's not a problem of Muksa because of Nolad, with all those ifs together, then a possibility that you could read the first day's newspaper on the second day of Yom Tov.
Another thing to note here is that Rashi says that the problem here is Muksa, problem of Muksa, which most of the Rishonim disagree and say that the problem here is not Muksa, like Tosafot suggests. The problem is that you might engage Nachri to do Malacha specifically for you. But Rashi might say that because even in a case where the Nachri picks it for himself, Rashi still says that it's problematic for you because maybe Shema Yarbe Bishvilo, or because of all the problems, but he calls it Muksa because then it still would be problematic. According to the other Rishonim, the only problem will be if the Nachri specifically brought it for you, or for Yisrael, would it be problematic? But if he brought it for himself, and then you happen to want it, according to these other Rishonim, according to many of them, that would be permissible because the issue is not an issue of Muksa, it's simply an issue of you engaging in Nachri to do Malacha for you. But in this case, he won't do it because, or you won't do it in the future because you had no connection to this Nachri, you had no idea who he was. That is a distinction drawn by the other Rishonim versus Rashi's explanation here of the problem of Muksa.
The Mishnah Berurah notes that this is only true with regards to the Isur Malacha that the Nachri does on your behalf, or he does it for himself, and then you are the beneficiary. According to Rashi, it's problematic because it's Muksa, therefore it's problematic both in the case where does it for self and in the case where he does it for you. But according to the other Rishonim, it's only a problem when he does it for you, not when he does it for himself. But as the Mishnah Berurah points out, that when it comes to the Isur of Tchum, everybody agrees that the Isur of Tchum is more kal, based on what the Gemara says here, that we matter for others and not for him. And therefore, most agree to Rashi's position that you are mutar after you cross over the first day of Yom Tov and Kadesh Yasu afterwards. If we mutar on the second day of Yom Tov, as opposed to their belief by other Isurim, like Isurei Muksa and other more severe Isurim, that it would be usher for both days of Yom Tov and then Kadesh Yasu afterwards. So everybody agrees, or is makil with regards to the violation of Tchum. If that's the only violation that you have here, the possibility that you would be mutar to do it after the first day and Kadesh Yasu, according to everyone's opinion. Again, the Bir Halacha favors heavily Rashi's position that even by Isurei Muktza or any other Isur that the Nachri does, that all you have to do is wait for that first day of Yom Tov and Kadesh Yasu afterwards.